Good afternoon, and welcome to What's Right for Me. I'm your host, Delaney Oakes, coming to you live from the soggy east coast of Florida, where it is currently mostly cloudy and raining. We've got some great guests today, and this is where I would usually introduce my co-host, Christina, but she's MIA, so I'm running the switchboard. So if things get weird, that's why, because I don't do this very often. I am an author, like my guests, mostly of romantic suspense novels, but I also have a couple of historic romances as well as sci-fi series. I share some of my unpublished books on my two blogs, which are DelaneyOakes.com and WriterSanctuary.blogspot.com. And I hope that people will stop by and read that and go look for my books. So I hope you'll pop over and visit. Thanksgiving is upon us. Tomorrow, I've already started my baking. I have two amazing authors to get us fired up and ready to celebrate. Neither one is a stranger to the show, and we're delighted to have them back. We're still waiting for the second one to call in, but here is the first one, and thank goodness he's here. First up is F. Kenneth Taylor. He's a St. Louis native, a freelance writer and self-published author. He enjoys writing in multiple genres, including sci-fi, poetry, dystopian, urban drama, and more. Welcome back, Kenneth. Please tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always glad to be on the show. Well, a little more about myself. Aside from writing, I'm also an artist. I mainly work with acrylic, and I've just started working with oil paints, so that's kind of a learning curve for me. I don't freelance as much as I used to. I might do a little freelancing every now and then, here or there, but it's mainly back and forth between the writing and the artwork. With the art, I'm also small business owner, F in the Art LLC. So it's kind of a juggling act.
You're a busy man, that's for sure.
I try.
Wow. Well, you know, I get bored if I don't have something to do. I will get really bored, and then I just can't stand myself. So I have to always have something to do. I was going to mention, you were talking about your artwork. Let's touch on that for a little while. Have you also done some of the covers for some of your books? I kind of remember you saying you did, and I have.
I've actually done, I want to say, at least four of my book covers. Graphic designs has always been something I wanted to get into. I just never really knew how, or, you know, didn't have any fancy software. And with the art, I kind of found a site where I can manipulate things and do a little bit with. So I started exploring it with a couple of book covers, with some of the book covers. And I actually did the book cover to my newest book, Road to Gabriel After Conspiracy, which we'll talk about in a minute. I did that book cover as well, and I did the book cover to me and KG. Well, it's not just me and KG. It's actually me and KG and Joelle Charles, who does the Within the City series. But the last book two, I did the book cover to that one as well. So, yeah, I do play around with it. I still haven't found, like, I don't know, quote unquote, graphic design software.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
But I would love to, because I feel like I can go much farther with that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that sounds... I play around with it. I can't do really fancy stuff. I just use the paid version of Pizap, PIZAP.com. And I like it because it isn't very expensive and I can do the stuff that I need to do. But if I were going to be doing it as a business, I would have to invest in something a whole lot better. But, you know, it does, yeah. It does what I need it to. And that's all that's important.
What's the name of it again?
Pizap, P-I-Z-A-P .com.
Okay.
They got a free version of it, but then I do the paid version, and it's really inexpensive for the year. So it's good. I think it was something Christina told me about a while back. And I like it because it works for what I needed to do. And, you know, if I wanted to do something really impressive, then I'd have to get Photoshop or something. But I don't have that kind of money.
I was just about to say, Photoshop could be pretty expensive, and then it's so many different versions of Photoshop. And I used to have an older version, but I just stopped using it.
I had one, but when I upgraded my computer, it no longer worked. So there went that. Fortunately, it wasn't one that I'd paid for. A friend of mine had keys for it because she had done a paid version, and then she had extra keys for the program, and she sent me one. So I was able to use that, but I couldn't upgrade it from what it was. But that was really nice. I used that for quite a while, and Photo Explosion that came with my printer. I had a Canon printer, and I liked that really well. But I don't know that you can get that separate from a Canon printer. And I don't even know if my new printer came with anything.
Right. But, you know, the other thing, it takes time to learn, you know, to learn those, that type of software and get familiar with it. And when you're busy trying to do stuff and get things done, you know, it's like, oh, God, how long is it going to take me to learn this?
Right.
You try it a couple of times, and you're like, all right, forget it. I'm going back to where I know. And then you come back somewhere down the road. So, yeah, and anybody who knows me knows I could be very impatient. It's like when I want something done, I want it done like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So
that sounds real familiar.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I don't want to sit down, and my husband will laugh at me because he says, you know, there are directions. It's like, when do I ever read directions? Have you not been married to me for 40 years and you think I read directions?
Right.
I don't read anything.
I could learn faster without the directions. If I get really, get stuck on something, then I might go to a manual, but I've always been a hands-on type of person. So
yeah. Well, one thing that my boys always tell me is if you don't know how to do something, hit YouTube, because chances are somebody has made a video of it. And that's the only way I can change my clock in my truck is if I YouTube it, because I can't figure it out from the manual. Can't figure it out.
But that it's true, though. You can find videos on YouTube for practically any and everything. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah. That's very true. I've done it a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to go wrong with YouTube.
Oh, Lord. Well, I think Kevin's going to be here in just a minute. He said he was going to call in a minute, and I said, call now. We're waiting for you. So
yeah, I'm hoping. Don't worry. I'll give him a hard time after the show.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Don't worry. I'll call and harass the hell out of him. I'm like, what the hell wrong with you? Call the damn show.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Got my own little enforcer over there. I appreciate it.
He's probably listening to me right now, say so. So
he
probably
be here shortly. I just don't know what's happened with Christina. Maybe she just forgot. But that's, you know, completely unlike her because, like I said, we've been doing this together. Oh my God, how many years? I'm trying to think.
I don't know, but
it's a really long time.
Yeah, because you were doing it before me and Kevin started, and I know we went for like 7 years.
Yeah, I've been doing it about 12, I think. Here he is. Hey there. Yeah. Nice of you to join us.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. Let me go ahead and introduce you, and then we can just get all of us talking. This is my second guest, KG Bethlehem. He's the author of fantasy, sci-fi, and dystopian novels, including Avenging Nights, Astronomical, and The Forever Spring. Welcome back, KG. Please tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Excellent. Thank you, Delaney, for having me back on again. And sorry about coming on a little bit late.
That's all right.
I appreciate it. You know, it's all today. Something came up. I had to take care of real quick. And I'm definitely gracious for you having me on again. I know last time I was supposed to have been on, this work-related conference just got kind of haywire. But
yeah,
more about my – yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. But I love being on the show. It's really easy-going format, and you're definitely a wonderful host.
Well, thank you. Well, I think you're a wonderful guest. In fact, you both are really wonderful guests. I'd have you guys on all the time, except, you know, I got to share with other people.
Definitely. a little more about me. I've been writing for probably over 15 years now, definitely over 15 years. Most of the categories of writing is general fiction, fantasy, dystopia, anti-utopian, science fiction. I think I said science fiction. Probably did. Sci-fantasy. Mm-hmm. I write poetry, but I never published any poetry. That was my first welcoming into creative writing, was going through poetry. But I started writing when I was in elementary school. Took a break from that, went back, and started writing again in college. And after that, I just kind of went on my way. In terms of creative writing. The guest you have on right now is a brother to me, brother from another mother, can I tell you, we grew up together in St. Louis, Missouri. We started writing around the same time. He started writing his first book before me, but for the most part, we pretty much started our journey around the same time frame. Poetry, I work with him. We own an online magazine called So Unique Magazine, which I started doing more nonfiction writing, which is definitely different. It was fun. I covered a lot of protest marches. I did a lot of on-location pieces with hiking and going to historical places around the area. I live in the DMV, Maryland in particular. And my love for writing mainly stems from the creative side, especially sci-fi and sci-fantasy and dystopian fiction, anti-utopian, and general fiction. I love building worlds, like creating worlds and societies and connecting them with other stories into a greater universe. That's something that I thoroughly enjoy doing. So, just a little bit about me in a nutshell in terms of being a writer.
I didn't remind you guys, but do you have your excerpts today? I forgot to remind you. It's been a busy week. Have you got something you can read for us?
I do have one.
Okay. Well, I want to go ahead and do that so we can get that out of the way, and then we can just talk. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
All right, Kenneth, why don't you kick it off for us, and then Kevin can come in. And y'all, I'm going to mess your names up. I'm just warning you right now. I always do, but I'm trying.
We know the lane. We know. It's all good.
That's good. That's good. I had a couple students when I was teaching. Their names were not anywhere near the same, okay? But they're these two pretty little girls with brown hair, and they were both very sort of preppy in the way that they dressed. They were very precise. And I got their names mixed up the first week of school. And then one of them moved. And I still would turn around and call the other one by the one who moved. I'd call her by that name. And she'd just give me this look, like, what is wrong with you? And then the other girl moved back. Right near the end of the school year, she came back. And then I had him again. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I had just gotten a handle on the name. And then she came back and was getting him mixed up again.
You
I
all
was
all
so embarrassing. Oh, well. All right, Kenneth, go ahead and tell us a little bit about the book.
Okay, so this excerpt is from the new book, which is a new genre for me. It's a spy novel entitled Rogue, the Gabrielle Axis Conspiracy. So this is chapter 11, and I'm going to try and set this scene up. So this is kind of a back-and-forth conversation between three of the main characters, and it's after they had, like, broke into this lab to beat the enemy to this serum or whatnot. And to get out, they had to fight a paramilitary to get out of it. So Rogue is about two spies. One is she's Egyptian. Her name is Amanta, and she works for the DNI. I hope I don't get these agencies mixed up. The other one is Afro-Cuban, and she works for the GIS. The agencies might be vice versa. I don't know. so
doesn't matter. It's okay.
Yeah, basically what happens is that they're sent on separate missions, but they're being used as pawns in this global plot, scheme, whatever. And the two agencies that they work for, they're collaborating with the antagonist, who's like a criminal mastermind that's like a trillionaire, so she has like so much money she don't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or what?
Wow.
So Amanta and Epifania, or Epi, eventually their paths cross, and they find out, they start kind of putting things together and realize, wait a minute, something's not right. No, you know. So eventually they're going to go rogue, hence the title.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, this scene is after they just retrieved the serum from a lab, like a hidden lab, whatnot, and they had to fight the paramilitary on their way out, and they got out. Okay. So, Amanta Huff, we have a pilot, replied Epifania, shifting her focus to Ariana DiMaggio. Do you have any more secrets we should know about before we put our lives on the line again and kill another two dozen people? No, DiMaggio solemnly replied. Give her a break, Amanta rattled, placing bags and equipment in the trunk. What would you have done in her position? I would have been upfront about the shit I was getting the two people who keep saving my life into. That's what the fuck I would have done. She barked, climbing into the car. Let it go, grunted Amanta. It's done. Nothing we could do about it now. Now we have the meeting to focus on, and we're long overdue for a sit rep with the GIS and D&I. She turned to Ariana DiMaggio. Who else knows your potential cure could be manipulated as a deadly bio agent? No one, Ariana DiMaggio sighed. Enrique was the only person who knew. Are you sure? Epi growled. That doesn't make sense if he was truly the trusted right hand you claim he was. How dare you, snap, DiMaggio. You have the audacity to insult him like that when he's not even alive to defend himself. He was more than a right hand or a colleague. He had become a friend to my family. I've never met a more devoted, caring soul in my life. Show him the fucking respect he deserves. Epi finally turned around and looked DiMaggio directly in her eyes. Bitch, spare me the fucking dramatics. That shit don't move me. I'm in the line of work where the most devoted and caring people always live double lives and have ulterior motives. So sit your naive ass still, shut the fuck up, and think about the fact we're voluntarily putting our lives and careers at risk to protect yours, so give us the fucking respect and honesty we deserve. Ariana Amanta Huff, try to understand our position. We see this all the time. I understand Mr. Mendoza was a good friend to you, and I'm sorry for your loss, but we need to start connecting some dots real fast, and you're right at the heart of things. Thank you, and I do understand. I don't think you do, said Amanta. Someone on your team knows the cure can be used as a lethal bio agent. The GDG was there for the same reason we were, to get the cure. Epifania, who had been quietly processing things in her mind the past few moments, finally broke her silence. She looked at Amanta. They're going to manipulate it and either sell it on the black market or use it for themselves. And what if she's right? Either way, Mendoza gets killed. He gives them what they want. He's useless and gets killed. He refuses. He gets killed. But suddenly Amanta interrupted. It'll make much more sense for him to be killed for not talking. He couldn't have talked, and Effie said. The cure would have been gone when we got to his lab. So, DiMaggio, you're right. Mendoza didn't talk, which means there's definitely a mole on your team. And chances are they've been there for a while. So that's the end of that.
Great. Wow.
Nice.
That was pretty good. Very good. Thank you. And please tell our listeners where they can find your books.
Well, it's going to be released on Amazon December 14th.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still time. There's still a few weeks before it's actually available. I wanted to do pre-orders, but they were only available on ebook, and I actually tried the ebook, but the formatting was off, and I just left it alone, which is why I usually don't do ebooks. So I hate that I couldn't offer pre-sales, but you know, I wasn't going to offer them if the format was off.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So,
well, I know I'm
14.
All right. Well, when I do ebooks, I go through draft to digital because then I can just upload my document file and they'll format it for everybody. And I just love that. And I don't care if I've got to pay them a few pennies from a sale. because then I don't have to figure out Amazon and Smashwords and Roku and all those other ones. They'll just do it. You know, you just pick which ones you want, and they'll do it. So that makes it really nice. And then I'm not sitting there going nuts over formatting, because I do not do that well. I truly do not. Like you, I don't have the patience to sit there and learn it. And there's a very steep learning curve for me anyway. So, great.
I've tried ebooks with some of my past books, and it's always the same problem. It's always I could never get them formatted correctly.
Yeah.
So,
look at Draft. It's Draft number 2 Digital. I think it's draftadigital.com, pretty sure. And they charge a minuscule amount. And then, like I said, they do it all for you, and it's awesome. It's awesome. And one of my authors told me that, because I was trying to get something, you know, publish it myself, and it was making me crazy. And she said, I just use this, and I just plug it in, and it's done. And I went over and looked after the show, and I was like, I love this. I am happy about this. So it's something to think about, because you just have to plug in your Word document, and they take care of everything else.
And it's called Draft to Digital.
Yes,
can you
Draft.
Can you put the link in the Messenger?
Yes, I will be happy to do that.
Yeah,
I'll be happy to do. I'll do it after the show, but I'll make myself a note to do that, because it is wonderful.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember who told me that. I cannot remember who it was. But, she told me, and I was like, do that? This is so great.
That's great.
It is
the
real thing.
The number 2, right? Not the word.
I'm sorry, what?
It's the number 2 and not the word 2?
Yes.
Okay.
But I'll put it in the group chat later.
Okay.
But it's wonderful. I think that every author should use it. They should give me money, because I have I have recommended it to at least a dozen people. So it's a good thing.
You should get a commission.
Kenneth, do you have a blog or a website you'd like to direct people to?
Oh, yeah. fkennetheller.com. That's my website. And you can pretty much find everything right there. My books, my artwork. You can find other links to other websites. I do have a Facebook author page, F. Kenneth Taylor. I have a Facebook page for my art, F. Kenneth Art LLC. Also on YouTube, F. Kenneth Art. Let me see what else. I'm on Twitter, F. Kenneth Taylor, LinkedIn, F. Kenneth Taylor. So, I'm not hard to find. Just type in my name, still I'll pop up somewhere.
I know some authors who use like weird nicknames or something like that, Twitter or something, and it's so confusing to me. I just use I'm everywhere as Delaney Oaks. That's it, just Delaney Oaks.
Yeah.
Nobody's got to figure out anything difficult. If they can spell Oaks and Delaney, they're good to go.
Don't
find me.
You know, first of all, I'm not going to remember half the shit my damn self. So
exactly.
You know, so I'm like, okay, this is just going to be my name across the board.
Yeah, because it's too confusing otherwise. And I confuse very easily. I do. There's some things that I'm just really spot on, and then there are other things like, like I had to go through and change a bunch of my passwords a while back because Google was giving me crap over it, and it wasn't accepting, wasn't accepting. So I'm using things like fuck Google and screw Facebook stuff like that because that was what, you know, because that was what was being accepted. So I could say these insulting things with a few numbers and exclamation marks and things in there, and it was cool. They would take those where, you know, when the other times I spent time thinking about it, and, you know, what can I use and blah, 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 and they weren't accepting it. So I was like, you know, screw you, Facebook. Hell with Tumblr. Fuck Twitter.
I don't know. I might leave Twitter because I don't know. I'm trying to wait and see what the Russian Elon Musk is going to take it in, but so far things don't sound too good.
I know a lot of people who are getting off there and going on something Mastodon or something. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what that is. I don't know anything about it. I don't know how to use it. And I signed up for all these different websites in order to promote my books, and I only really go on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Those are the only things I do because I figured them out, and they're easy, and there are a lot of people there, and I don't have to sit there and spend my time trying to figure out a bunch of crap I don't care about, you know? I am very bored. I get very bored easily. And I have a very low bullshit threshold, you know. I just do. Well, we need to go ahead and get Kevin's excerpt, too. So set it up a little bit for us, okay?
Okay. Mine is from a particular book I enjoy writing. It's a collection of short stories called 30 Moments of Time. And excuse me. The book in itself, short stories, stem from different genres. I think one is sci-fi, one is sci-fantasy, other one is more fantasy, supernatural, and a couple of them were just general fiction and mainly period pieces. So, you know, it's fun writing short stories. I've done it long time ago back in grade school when I used to write short stories about the Digital Knights and me and my friend Everett. But it was I have fun writing these. So this particular one is from the short story called You Assume I Wouldn't Notice. And it's a period piece that takes place during the period of – I was around the Harlem Renaissance period, close to the end of it, in New York City. So – yeah, and the character in this short story, her name is Danae. She's an African-American woman, black woman, trying to make her way in a very patriarchal society, especially around that time frame that women wasn't always viewed equal. They weren't viewed equal. And that went double time for women, you know, black women. So she had to wrestle with that. And also wrestle with maneuvering through this landscape. And this part of the story I'm going to read now is taking place kind of halfway through it. By the first half, she's a little bit naive, and she's kind of getting her feet wet. And this is kind of describing the second half of the short story. But it just goes into it pretty smoothly. So I hope it does. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. This is from You Assume I Wouldn't Notice. A year has passed as the cold winter starts to diminish across the Harlem, finally. This passage of time halted the schemes of many men, particularly evil men. The club scene was still at its height of brilliance in the form of soulful music. Regrettably, the drug scene was just as decisive. is not more of an influence than the incredible writers of Harlem. It was a known fact that Forest Beyond the Trees Bar rose in prominence. The leading recreation of jazz masters, Forrest Baylor, mugged his power, which took over half of New York City. He was the man behind the throne. He even parred with the Italian mafia leaders and the Polish crime families. Even with all that happening, Danae stood behind the scenes. She gathered much influence without the glaring eyes of the public. Her natural enemies had a problem seeing who she was. She owned her new club in Brooklyn called Melody Hour, and it was a tremendous success. One thing that made her stand out was the booking of Negro women jazz singers. They, the people, flocked to Danae, and most of this was thanks to Billie Holiday putting a good word around the circuit. Danae and Forrest worked arrangements with each other and shared some acts for different nights. The talent appreciated getting two gigs, nearing the same pay as they did from exposure along with door sales. Danae likewise ran underground booking and escort services. The peculiar thing was that the escorts were the bookies, and their dealings with sex included bets on local sporting games. It turned out to be a significant moneymaker, as Danae found out or already knew that men were more susceptible to spending money if the simplistic needs were first met. She understood that reasoning quite well, as it mirrored her relationship with Forrest. My appetite for sexual relations proves itself on money ventures, is what she would routinely say. To Danae's credit, she only had one side relationship. More would be considered too messy, and she knew her enterprise would be in danger if control was not met. This, of course, destroyed her relationship with Martin. It outlasted its purpose, which was a terrible development of ambition. One recurring issue was the mental state regarding the people she had seen die. Danae never forgave herself for the death of her grandmother, as well as a young boy by the water. She did not even want to remember his name and went through hell to forget it. These nightmares happened at a very emotional point in her life. The normal cycle each month where emotions were in influx are highs and lows. Furthermore, before and sometimes after her dealings with Forrest, Danae somewhat believed that guilt was playing with her, and it was beginning to get unbearable because of the affinity with her former boss. But at times, she brushed it off, moved on, but never really did in her mind as she carried on the business. Then all came to an end. That's it.
Hmm.
So that
wow,
pretty much
that was
sets
great.
Up. Thank you. That pretty much sets up the rest of the story, and pretty much is really near the climax, and then it had a pretty good resolution that all parties got what they really deserve. And,
yeah.
Good. I always like it when those who deserve something get it. I definitely like that.
Yeah.
I like a little tidbit with the mention of Billie Holiday. Like,
yeah.
Okay. You got some connections.
Yeah.
She was
definitely.
an amazing talent. Wow. Just,
yeah, she was.
I love her. Where can our listeners find your books?
Most of my books are on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, online, and Lulu.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other ones scattered throughout the internet. But for the most part, you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu. You can find some on Books A Million. And you go to Google, it had Google Store that had a lot of books. It also had Kiki's Books as well, Google Store. But those are the main places you can find a lot of my books. And a lot of them come in e-books. Some don't, but more than the books I've written are in e-book format.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a website or a blog you'd like to direct people to?
Yes, the website is pretty much my blog. It's kgbethlehem.blog, kgbethlehem.blog. And when you go on that, you get to see a random posting. A lot of them just kind of geared towards writing and a lot of my own location pieces where I go out hiking. I do video blogs when I'm hiking around the area and outside the area mm-hmm. in the States. So that's on there, and also have links to my social media, mainly Facebook pages. They have the Vision Knights Facebook page and KG Bethlehem Facebook page and Shout Within the City Facebook page. And I also have a presence on Twitter, LinkedIn, of course, Facebook, and Instagram. I know you guys were talking earlier about the social media sites I usually use. The main ones I use is Facebook and IG for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I do go on Twitter, but my Twitter is linked with my IG. So when I post on IG, they automatically go on my Twitter. I'm just not on Twitter that much because I can't stand the format. It can be
yeah,
a little,
I don't either.
Yeah, it can be a little daunting, confusion. I don't get it. But you know, I do more interactions on IG, and.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to get people to come to my page, but I need to start spreading, you know, going out a little bit more. LinkedIn, I have a very minimal presence, but I do belong to a couple of writing groups. So, but for the most part, if people want to see more of my stuff, definitely go to my website again, kgbethlehem.blog,
okay.
And I have a strong presence on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Okay. Yeah, you know what my interaction is on Twitter? I post stuff and then I go away. And that's how I am on Tumblr and LinkedIn. And I do interact quite a bit on Facebook because I'm comfortable there. I've been there for a long time. But some of these other things, like I was trying to get to know Twitter and I was following somebody, I don't remember who it was. There was this conversation going on, and then he said something about, oh, time for bathroom break. I'm like, I don't want to know that.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I don't need to know that you've got to get up and go pee. I don't want to know that. So, that kind of took some of the wind out of my sails for Twitter, because up to that point, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of getting the hang of this. I'm like, no, I don't want to get the hang of this. So that's my... The extent of my interactions there is just posting stuff and then I leave. That works for me.
I mean, that's really about all you can do on Twitter because that's pretty much what I do. And most of the stuff I post is pertaining to either my books or my art. So, I'm really... try socialize on well, I don't really socialize on any of the sites, to tell the truth. most of the stuff, no matter what site I'm on, it's either going to be about my books or my art. Facebook, you might see a couple of pictures of me, you know, that don't have anything to do with that, you know, you might see if I travel or, you know, something like that. But, yeah, usually I use social media for business purposes. And I try to be more active on LinkedIn because LinkedIn, there's most of the people there are actual professionals. Unlike Facebook, you got someone who claims to be this or that, and they're just talking off the side of their neck. You know, but LinkedIn I mean, they are. A lot of people, they think they come up with a key title for a company, oh, now you're a business owner. Really, what's your EIN? Huh? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I hear you, definitely.
But LinkedIn has actual professionals in different industries, and I figure, you know, mm-hmm. that's a good spot to network, you know.
Right. Yeah, about the only other thing that I do with Twitter and Facebook is I listen to a lot of music on YouTube. I'm just, as if I'm awake and not doing a show, I'm listening to music. And I will share different songs, either old favorites or things I haven't listened to in a while or, you know, just whatever, things that I just came across and it's really good. And so I share a lot of music. And that's it. That's the extent of my interaction on Twitter and, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with that. I'm good with that. Because it's easy to get sucked in and spend way too much time.
Yeah.
And I'm just not.
I know with me, I do talk on social media and converse, but that's mainly on Instagram and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
As well, but really a lot of Instagram, because a lot of rides I met, we share each other's posts, we like each other's posts, and we kind of have a symbiotic relationship, so we really help each other try to increase our numbers. So, you definitely want to, you got to keep up some type of online relationship, and it's beneficial. That's how I met Esri. On Instagram, she's out the blue, sending messages, like my books, and start liking her books, and then we buying each other books. And a couple of people bought my books online. So I've met a lot of good people on Instagram. It's definitely be beneficial. It seems like the writers to me, anything, it's just not on other platforms. I haven't been on every one of them. But Instagram, they like all about their writing to get exposure. And you share their stuff like this stuff, they will return the favor. They don't mess around. So I just had a really good relationship with them. But I think on LinkedIn, I don't have a big presence. But that's how I met you, Delaney. I saw one of your posts about your – that's when you called it Red River Radio.
Yes.
Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I met you. Yeah, I sent you a message.
Uh-huh.
You sent me back, and that's how we connected. So LinkedIn
that's
definitely
right.
has
I'd
his
forgotten
advantages.
That.
Well. Hmm? Yeah, that was
I'd forgotten
years ago.
That.
Yeah,
yeah. We ended up, we had to change the name because apparently, and I didn't know this, there is some big network like in Louisiana or Texas or something that's called Red River Radio. And they sent me this real nasty message, you know, to basically cease and desist using their name because we'd been on Blog Talk now for like at least 12 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That I understand that they have been on National Public Radio for a really long time, but they weren't on Blog Talk. And then suddenly they were, and their fans were getting confused because our logos were similar, and it's the same name. And so they got real ugly with me. He was very terse and basically told me, you know, that if you don't cease and desist, we will go about legal action, and we are sure that you used our name on purpose in order to get fans for yourself. And I was like, dude, chill.
Well,
I said, you know, I didn't even know, you know, I didn't even know they existed, for one thing, which I told them, and I'm sure they were deeply insulted, but I don't care. And I didn't name the station. April Robbins did, and the reason she called it Red River Radio is because she lives along the Red River. You know?
Yeah.
It's a big river.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, if anyone on that station... It's out there listening. Fuck Red River Radio Station. Where the hell are you from? I'll say it for you, Delaney. Out here.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Okay.
I was just real aggravated with him. He did apologize. I admit I did give him kind of a verbal slap down. I was impolitely polite, put it that way. I did not curse. I did not fuss, but I made it very clear that he was being an asshole, and I expected an apology.
It's all good.
Somebody has to take that, and it hit me at a real bad time of day. I was not having a good day, and I got this message. I'm like, geez, you know, he could have been polite. He was not polite. He was really snotty, like I'd done this on purpose. And yeah, no, that doesn't fly. That does not fly. My daughter has a phrase that I have now come to use because it works. And she will say, no, that doesn't work for me. And then she will proceed to tell the other person what does work for her, which is usually exactly the opposite of what they're telling her.
Telling her, yeah.
Magic. It's magic. And I love the way she intones it. No, that doesn't work for me. Because it works better if you say it that way. Just in case you ever need to use it.
Yeah, you kind of give it back.
She tells people when they start trying to give her a hard time, she says, no, you have me confused with a nice person. I am not a nice person. My husband is a nice person. I'm not. And so between those two comments, she usually gets what she wants. I'm learning. She is the master of it. I am learning. But she's a social worker, so her job is to advocate. And she's damn good at it. She's really good at it. If I'm ever half as good at it as she is, I will feel like I've accomplished something. She did not learn that assertiveness from me. That's not my influence. She came up with that on her own.
And her line of thinking, especially being a social worker, you do have to. You have to be abrasive, but professionally. And you deal with more of a tough clientele compared to a lot of other people. So somebody coming off, trying to come off nasty or rude, you can easily brush that to the side. Okay, that's all you got. And you can just put it back on them.
Exactly. And she works for the VA. So she really has some, she really has to be very assertive with that, because they all have this, this is the way it's always been done. She says, but is that a rule? Does it have to be done that way? Because, for me, that's not working. And so I appreciate that. I would not want her job. I would want to hurt people if I had her job. And that's generally considered inappropriate behavior. So it's a good thing she has
it's
that job and I don't. But I did teach her how to verbally eviscerate someone. She may not have learned the assertiveness from me, but she learned that from me. So I am very proud of myself. We were talking earlier about what genres you guys write. And I wanted to ask you, I know you you both do sci-fi and dystopian and poetry and so forth. And I wanted to ask you, though, have you ever thought about any genres that you haven't explored that you'd like to, or do you have any that you probably are never going to do? KG, how about you?
The ones up, it's a particular story that I'm going to write. It's going to be my next book, The Story of Tom. And it's a historical fiction piece, and I never wrote historical fiction before. So that's, I'm not going to say too much about it, but that's now I'm really kind of chomping at the bits to get started on that story. And that's after I finish up writing the second book to a Vision Night series. So historical fiction, jump on that. Maybe I thought about supernatural realism. I like to kind of played around with it, some of my short stories, and like Shot Within the City, some parts of it kind of dealt with some supernatural surrealism. So mainly with Blood Oath Transformation as like one of the main antagonists of the book series for Shot Within the City. So I think those two genres I like to jump into, and probably steampunk or Afro futurism, both of those. So yeah, I can see those three, those four.
Yeah.
I like to do.
Have you ever? Is there anything that you don't think you're ever going to get into?
Romantic comedy. Never. I'm not, not a romantic writer. Not a comedic writer. That genre I'll never touch.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I'm not going to do like the typical rom-com stuff. Like you see every Christmas, all the rom-coms. I'm never going to do that. I love romance. I love romantic suspense, but my romance novels would never make it onto Lifetime. No. They would start reading and they go, oh, hell no.
Why is that? I'm curious.
Oh, well, for one thing, the language, and for another thing, they don't follow the set format that they have for things, and they don't really... My, I don't know if you've ever read any of my books, but they definitely, and you don't really see that, you know, on Lifetime or something. And, yeah. So
I'll say no.
They would, they wouldn't
probably
go
not.
For that. But that's okay. Yeah, I'm all right with that.
It probably sounds like more of those, was it old school HBO At the Dark? When they had those dark romantic skit films, not films, but I can't think of any of the show, but it was like HBO At the Dark. I mean, this show's nudie, but it wasn't X-rated, nothing like that. But the story was a little more raunchier, and they had kind of unpredictable endings. It wasn't your status quo ending to like romantic story. I'm guessing.
Huh.
That's funny. You know, crazy thing about it, I'm not into romantic stuff, but there are some romantic movies, a couple of them that I can watch over and over again. One of them is Poetic Justice. The other one is Love and Basketball. The other one is City of Angels.
Oh, that's the only one I'm familiar with in that lineup is City of Angels. That's so sad.
Yeah, it is sad.
I watched it once, and I got to the end of it like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
I was
upset.
But it does have a beautiful song by Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah.
And I'll listen to the song, but I won't watch the movie.
yeah, that movie was sad as heck. Especially all that went through to lose his wings and like, damn, man. I think it was based off of a British movie. There was
probably
a British movie similar that was based off of, but I can't remember.
I don't remember either. But, yeah, it's beautiful, but, oh, God, no. And another movie, my kids convinced me to watch this movie. It was Robin Williams. So you'd think comedy.
Mm-hmm.
No. Heavy, heavy, heavy drama called What Dreams May Come. And it is the saddest movie I have ever in my life seen. It was like 3 hours and 10 minutes long. I cried for 3 hours and 9.5 minutes. Because there's like 30 seconds in there where you're not sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
That's like right at the beginning. It was awful. I sat there with a box of tissues. Yeah, it was terrible. Never watch it again. I mean, if you like movies that make you seriously depressed, go for it, be my guest. But if you like movies that are going to make you laugh and not feel depressed, it is not
right.
The movie for you. Yeah, definitely not. Kenneth, is there a different genre that you might like to try or one that you're not interested in trying at all?
Well, I'm already outlining my next book, and KG is actually helping me with it. And it's another new book for me. It's fantasy. So that's going to be, I've never done fantasy before, and before I wrote Rogue, I had never done a spy novel before. So I'm really excited about that one. I've been working on the outline probably for a couple of weeks now. And like I said, KG's been helping me with some of the world building, whatnot. So I'm excited to get started on that. But what I probably would not do, most likely would not do, would be romance, horror. I don't, it may sound weird because I do sci-fi. I'm planning a fantasy book now, and this genre kind of falls in between the two. I don't see myself doing steampunk. I don't know. I've never really been a big fan of it, even in like TV and movies. There's certain movies, you know, where, okay, yeah, that was cool. You know, it's like that.
Yeah, like The Matrix.
But I just don't see myself doing steampunk. One genre that I did that I probably won't do again is urban drama. I feel like, I just feel like it's overrated, and a lot of the urban drama that I see is along the same lines. It's the same old stuff. And it's like, no, I don't want to be part of that.
I'm not familiar with that genre. I'm totally I've heard the name, but I don't know what urban drama is exactly.
Well, it's mainly a lot of black authors write urban drama, and it's like stories or books about the hood, or, you know, or some ghetto-ass love triangles, you know. Now, I'm not in, I don't want to come off like I'm shitting on urban drama artists, because I'm not, or at least I'm not trying to, but every time I see some, it's just the same. It's the same stuff. And, you know, so I'm like, okay. Like I said, I can't shit on them because I've written an urban drama book. That was the first book I ever self-published. I just don't see myself doing that again, at least not at this point. You know, I might change my mind a year from now, 6 years, a month, no, who knows? But right now, I don't see myself doing urban drama again. I think it's too saturated, you know. And I'm like, nah, I'll pass. Y'all can have that one.
I can understand that.
Now, I thought of years ago, I was trying to do a nonfiction, and it was going to be based on like stereotypes that blacks see and give in American society. So I may still come back to that. You know, so it's going to be like a wake-up call, not only to America, like this is how blacks are treated or have been treated throughout history, but also to blacks. Like, look, everybody wants to say, quote unquote, oh, the white man did this, the white man. It's not all, quote unquote, the white man. Some of y'all fucked up too. You know, it's like, let's be honest now. Some of y'all fucking up too. So
yeah,
you know, it's both
yeah, I think
ways.
It's just dark. Kind of a, you know, that kind of thing is just not really based on any one race. Everybody has their fuck up moments. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's like there's fault on both sides, and
mm-hmm.
usually no one wants to hear the other side.
Oh yeah.
You know. So it's like a wake up call to both ends of it. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like I said, it's something I might come back to in the future.
Hope you do.
Yeah.
I definitely hope you do.
Yeah, that one's going to piss some people off. I know that. So it should sell really good. It should sell real good. Controversy sells.
Yes, it does. You're right about that. And people will buy it even if they don't. You know, if they don't agree with you, they'll still buy it because they're like, I want to see what this fool's talking about. And so they'll still buy it. Or
yeah.
They'll at least argue about it, whether they read it or not. They'll argue with somebody else about it. And that free publicity, hey, works
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I know you were talking, y'all were talking a little bit ago about planning and plotting out your books. So are you both plotting? I mean, are you plotters by nature, or are you more of pantsers? Kevin, how do you usually approach things? Do you know exactly what you want to talk about when you start writing, or do you just sit down and write?
No, I plan my I usually pretty much figure out what story I want to write. I come up with the principal characters, come up with a setting. Well, sometimes I do the setting first, and then I come up with the characters, and then I just kind of start outlining how I want the story to go. It's kind of like a loose
mm-hmm.
outline because it will change while I'm writing it. But, yeah, I got to plan myself out. I just can't sit down. And if I sit down and start writing, it won't go anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I think the first time I've done that, I tried to write a story years ago, and and it just I think I got to like page 6, and I ain't know where else to go, and I'm like,
no.
I'm never doing this again. So no, so yeah, I had to plan my works out. Yeah.
I understand. Kenneth, how about you?
I'm a little of both. It kind of depends on what I'm working on. So,
uh-huh.
I take for instance, if I'm working on my sci-fi series, Aftermath, well, I've been writing that series since 2001. I know that series, even the parts that I haven't written yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I could probably just start writing with very,
yeah.
very little to no planning. But like the Rogue, my spy novel, I had never done that before. I had to plan that out. The fantasy book, I've never done fantasy before. I'm planning that one out. It depends on what I'm doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But ordinarily, I'm like, I just sit down and write, because what happens with me is a lot of times, the more I write, the more ideas come to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then sometimes down the road it causes problems because then I got to go back and kind of straighten things out and tweak this or tweak that and, you know, to make it all really flow and connect and make since, but I'm both ways. You know, sometimes I like, sometimes I play.
Mhm. Yeah, my plan begins with, I think I'll write a book about, and then I sit down and write it. I tried outlining, because I read this article years ago that said, you know, you need to know your beginning, middle, and your ending. You need to know your characters. You need to know this, that, and the other. And there are times I don't even know where the book is going to be set. I haven't got any clue as to who my characters are, or sometimes I'll have names. Like one of my published novels, So Much It Hurts, I had the three main characters' names in my head when I sat down to write. That was it. And I knew, I knew that she was going to be a musician, one was going to be an artist, and the other guy was going to be a business major. And that was all I had in my head. And sat down and wrote that book for NaNoWriMo a few years ago. That's the most that I've had for most of my books.
I don't like when I see those articles like that. Well, you need to have the setting, the characters. Not necessarily. No, you don't.
Yeah.
I don't really get that. I mean, yeah, if you sit down and outline that stuff, you know, okay, this is the beginning, the middle, the ending, blah, blah, blah. It helps, but it's not necessary.
Right. Yeah, long time I thought, oh, I'm doing something wrong. And then I realized that, no, I was just looking at the wrong advice. Because we all know that the approach that the three of us take, we may have similarities, but it's going to be vastly personalized. You know, what works for Kenneth may not work for me and Kevin and vice versa, you know. And you just have to find out what works for you. And it took me a while. But then I figured that out, and I was like, yeah, this writing thing is fun. I was fine after that. But I didn't even outline term papers when I was in high school and college. I would just sit down and write it, and then I'd write the outline after I wrote the paper.
Oh, now, here's a funny thing about me. Book reports, okay, in high school, I was not a reader. I could care less. This is the most boring thing in the world. So whenever I would have to do a book report, I would read the back cover. Maybe if there was an insert at the front of the book, I might read the entire first chapter, or I might read the entire last chapter, and I barely skim the middle of the book. I write a book report, get it like a B or something on it, a B plus. And I had students like you. And then they kept putting me in more and more advanced English classes. I'm like,
he was a good writer.
Hell, but in high school, the only thing I was writing in high school was like gangster raps.
But teachers, even with that, people like good writers and English teachers who are good teachers, they can recognize writing skills. Because while we're working in detention, while I used to work in detention, especially on a treatment unit, sometimes I recognize some kids who are straight up street kids, but I recognize when they write a paper or we have them write this poem or write whatever. You're like, oh, you got some skills. You can, even with them writing whatever, you can kind of tell, like, you got some pretty good writing skills. So I think your teachers saw that and were like, hey, we would like to expand what you're doing now.
I'm pretty sure they did. They saw it long before it was even a thought in my mind, you know. And Because it's like sometimes now I'll sit back and look, you know, sit down and look back on it and like, wow, huh, okay, and look what I'm doing now, writing books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wrote my 10th
yeah.
book. Role is when it's published next month, it'll be my 10th self-published book and my 10th year of being a self-published author. Wasn't planned
awesome.
That way. I didn't plan it that way. It just kind of happened that way.
Uh-huh. That's fantastic. Wow.
Yeah, self-published
yes,
my first book in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm
that's
like,
great.
Oh, this is number 10 in year 10.
That's very cool. I started out with my first historical novel was published by this small publishing company. And, you know, and so I thought, this is great. And I got a couple others published there, too. And then
mm-hmm.
he started stealing from us, and so I severed my ties with that publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done some through Tyrgar in Ireland, and they're wonderful. They do pretty much romance. They've done some sci-fi and some other stuff, too, but almost predominantly
mm-hmm.
romance. And then I got to the point where I was like, you know, I'm going to put out some of these by myself. And that was after my guest had told me about Draft to Digital. And then I was like, yeah, I can do this. This isn't so hard. But for me now, it's a matter of deciding which one I want to do and just getting it done.
Yeah.
And that's what I really have trouble with is figuring out which book I want to publish, you know?
I don't write as fast as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I first started, and Kevin will tell you this, I could write 2 or 3 books in the same year. And when I say books, I'm talking like 200-plus pages each.
Mm-hmm.
I could write in like 6 months or less. If
wow.
multiple books. Now, it takes like two years to write one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? I can
and
understand
granted,
that.
I'm doing a lot. I have a lot more going on now, nowadays, and I'm juggling a lot more, but still. Plus, I kind of shifted I'm not going to say entirely my style, but I'm a little, in the past I was more dialogue based. Now with the last few books, I've gotten much better at being more narrative and
mm-hmm.
learning to the dialogue and the narratives, and that actually came from KG. I think I was reading Astronomical. And even though I never finished the book, I think I got about halfway through it. But, like, his characters, you can really see he really defined their personalities so much. It got to a point where somebody could be talking, and he hadn't said who was talking yet, you know, but I knew who
mm-hmm.
it was just by what was being said or how it was being said. This so-and-so, you know, I'm like, okay, damn, I need to do that, you know, and you can say character development, but part of character development is a good narrative about
mm-hmm.
your characters, you know.
Yeah.
And you throw that with good descriptive narratives and passages that adds depth to your story,
mm-hmm.
you got to know the book. You know?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I get real tired of books where the characters all talk alike. That, especially when it's completely out of character for that particular type of person to talk like that. There's a very famous author. He's a fantasy author, and his books are, you know, epic fantasies where they have something terrible happening, and then they have to go take care of this, and along the way they have many adventures, and they're just, it's like he took a cookie cutter and just went boom, 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 boom. And it bothers me. And in this one particular book, he had a queen, a knight, well, two knights who were friends, an ancient wizard, a sorceress, a young wizard's assistant, a barbarian, a thief, and like a Viking. And that's not even all.
Oh, okay.
They're like 15 main characters, okay? And they all sounded alike. All of them.
Wow.
Whether it's the well-educated queen or the thief who grew up in the back streets robbing and beating people, and he's going to sound as eloquent as a queen? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Mike, I don't know if you I hope that you two were able to tell when I was doing my excerpt, even with Rogue, like Elpy and Amata are like night and day. Elpy, yeah, is a little bit younger and more of the fire starter, shit starter.
Yeah, she's very volatile. I thought you did a great job. Partly with the way you were speaking when you were reading the two different parts, but also their manner of speaking, because each person has a different rhythm to how they say their words. I mean, people can tell just from the three of us being on this call that if they didn't know who you guys were, they'd be able to tell the differences between you, partly because your voices are different, but also the way that you speak. And you have to translate that into your characters. And, yeah, I thought you did great. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to show you the difference between the two characters because, like I said, they're night and day. Elpy, she's younger. She's more aggressive and more blunt. A monster is a little bit older, a little reserved. Now, she could get in your face if she needs. You know, if need be, she can stress the same point as Elpy can, but without the cursing, the threats and stuff that Elpy would put in there. Like I've learned, like character development, good narratives, that's. Those things are crucial for a good book. And like you were saying, Delaney, everybody can't have the same tone. You know, like you said, a thief from the back alleys of the street is not going to speak the same as the fucking queen.
Yeah, right?
Who's raised in royalty, you know, and a big fancy castle with all kinds of servants and dignitaries around, you know.
Exactly.
Just,
these are two different backgrounds. So, I mean, that in itself, how somebody's raised is going to kind of affect how they view the world, because it's probably going to affect how they interact with the world, and their speech is going to go along with that. So,
Now, only exception, I would say there would be an exception to where the thief, let's say, thief maybe does speak very proper, educated, because maybe there's a hidden past author, maybe suffer from grace, so to speak. Something like that, that's possible. But you have to establish that early, you know.
Exactly. Yes. Yes, if you don't, then you've got this person acting completely different from what's anticipated and expected. And I don't like that. Nothing jolts me out of a story faster than inconsistent dialogue. I just don't feel with it well. And my books are all very dialogue heavy. I was in theater before I became an English teacher, and, you know, in plays, everything is dialogue. Yes, you have movement and everything, but when you're writing a play, the majority of it is conveyed with your dialogue. And you've got all this business here, and you've got this business over there, and that helps to tell a story, but your exposition and your moving forward, that's all done with dialogue. So my books are very, very dialogue heavy because I used to write plays. And I've tried really hard to differentiate with the characters too, because that's really important. So I understand.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like, my earlier books were more dialogue because that's the only way I knew how to get the story out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, you know, I started working on changing that when I started reading KZ's Astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was like, okay. But when I wrote the sequel to Aftermath, that was my first time really putting a strong emphasis on character development and narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled with this. I struggled writing that book for a while. It took a little more than 2 years. But when it was finally done and I went back and read it, I was so happy with it because I realized that there was gaps that was left from part one that I couldn't focus on because part one is like narrative. I mean, not narrative, but dialogue-based, so heavy on dialogue. But when I went back and on part two, I added the narratives and the descriptions, and, you know, I was able to fill in those gaps from part one. I was like, oh, man. So ever since then, that was like 5 years ago, I've been trying to have more of a balance between the dialogue and the narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been working for me. It's getting easier for me to work that way.
Yeah, I know with me, dialogue was, especially writing, when I was writing with my early stuff, was more of a weakness because I always loved to jump to the narrative and describing the scene, which kind of helped set up the character for me, and also the setting and description of the scene or what's going on kind of sells the emotional balance with the character. So I depended on that a lot, more so compared to what the person was actually saying. And that was a weakness. So I know Kenny used to look at it and say, well, you should definitely focus on your dialogue so everybody won't start sounding the same. And that's when I started switching things up, especially before I wrote Astronomical, to help distinguish each character's voice. I mean, like somebody's reading it, they can't hear the voice, but you at least write it differently, maybe add a little more slang, and they might use certain words or maybe simple structure. You can actually help kind of determine that cadence. So that helped a lot because with Kenny's writing, I used to call his style of writing like attitude dialogue. And it's more so because you get the, while you're reading this stuff, it's almost like you watching a TV show or a movie where people are being animated, but not just being animated because they're angry, but also being animated because they have emotional connection to what's going on. And he, you know, he did that extremely well. So I had to adopt that when my writers started, you know, my stories that I started creating more in the future. So my, you know, my characters won't sound the same. Because in the Vision Knight first story, I had some of the leaders like Sharkstar, Razorblade, almost sounding alike where they talking to the other members of the party, who was a sorceress, who was an assassin, and those were women. And they almost like, it was indistinguishable with who was talking. I said, well, I can't make that mistake again. So, and Vision Knife was my first, that was my first published book. And I'm like, yeah, I gotta switch this up. So, yeah, dialogue for me was, I got a lot better with dialogue. I still love writing narrative more so than dialogue. But with that being said, when I started learning how to create characters and let them reflect on how I write them and when they speak to each other, it just helped my stories a lot. It really helped the readers to connect with them more. So I wholeheartedly agree with what y'all are talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, something else, Kel, I think when we started doing Shadow Within the City series, you know, I think those books came out so well because your weakness was my strength, and my weakness was your strength.
Yeah,
like you was always.
I agree.
Yeah, you were always naturally better at narratives and descriptive writing than I was. So I didn't have to worry about that too much. I was like, oh, okay, well, Kel got that. And dialogue comes easy and natural to me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I'm going to focus on this. Now you combine, you have a writer that focuses more better at dialogue, then you have another writer that's better at narratives and descriptions, and you put them together on a project.
Oh yeah,
you're gonna have a pretty balanced book.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I agree.
See, I struggle a little bit with narrative, that because I'm so used to the dialogue. I got the dialogue down. But I'm more, my husband will tell me, well, you didn't do enough description here. Now, let me qualify that slightly in that he loves those fantasy books that I was talking about. And he has read a lot of fantasy and sci-fi. And his favorite ones are the ones that go into, like, intricate, minuscule detail about how somebody's complexion looks and the shape of the leaves on the trees and how the sunlight comes through the dusty window and all that. I mean, I was reading one book that he recommended to me, and they're talking about the size and shape of the cobblestones and how the moss or grass or something is growing in between. That's not necessary to the story at all. And I don't want to know that. You know?
Does he write?
What?
Does your husband write?
A little bit. He started a few years ago writing some stories connected with this this online game that we play. It's called Astaria. And it was originally called Horizons. But so he's been writing some stories to go along with that just for fun. They're really hard for me to read. He'll start telling me about I have trouble following him. I'm sorry, what? You're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, what about now?
Yeah, you're better. Yeah.
Okay. No, I was going to say the reason I was asking asking was because if he's not a writer, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
That's probably why he enjoys such intricate details.
Oh, I'm
sure. But us as writers, that's like over the top for me.
Oh, yeah. That's like unnecessary. My father was an English professor, and he did a lot of editing. And all through college, I helped him. My mother and I would help him edit these manuscripts because he had this one that he had to completely rewrite. I won't say almost. He didn't change the title or the author's name, and he didn't change the facts. But pretty much everything else had to be rewritten because this man had absolutely no clue how to write. But when you're a professor, you're expected to publish. And he'd been getting pressured into publishing, so he did this god-awful book, and we helped edit it. And my dad handed me a blue pencil and a stack of papers, and he said, "You may not know what's wrong, but you know when it is wrong, and you know how to correct it." And that was my trial by fire, leaping into editing.
Yeah.
So when I sit down to write or to edit, I hear his voice in my head, and that's really disconcerting. It's really disconcerting. And I'll get in there, and I'll be looking at something, thinking, oh, should I keep this? Should I cut it? And then I hear him saying to me, if you think it needs to be cut, then cut it. Don't waffle around. Just cut it. And so I do, but I learned to keep the things I cut out. Because you may be able to use them later or in another book, right?
Yeah.
But I've got that inner dialogue going on with him, this conversation when I'm trying to edit.
Mm.
But it works. It really works. And I hear him when I'm struggling with how to write something, and I hear this, no. Just no. Don't do it that way.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, Dad, you're doing this to me from the grave. What the hell?
Yeah, he's definitely always with you.
Yeah, crazy. He's always with me. And you know what's really annoying is he's always right.
Yeah.
That's really disconcerting. He is always right. So, you know, he's just my little editing buddy there on the side, which is great. I know a question I wanted to ask you guys. Going back to your excerpts and your characters, if one of your characters had a theme song, what would it be? How about you? If one of your characters, or even a couple of your characters, had a theme song, what would it be?
I don't know. Well, in Rogue, Effie would probably be, what was that song? I don't know who sang it, but Bad to the Bone.
Oh, yeah. That's
I don't know who sang it.
His name? George Thorogood, I think. Isn't that his name? Pretty sure that was George Thorogood. Okay, good one. Okay.
She might have two, because then the other one that comes to mind is more recent. It's a song Rihanna and Eminem did together. There's a monster in my closet or something. I can't sing it, but it was a popular song a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I don't think I know.
Eminem and Rihanna. I can't think. Yeah, I don't think nobody else will really have a theme song. I'll have to think about that one for a while.
Yeah. Let me know what that song is, because I know they did that song called Love the Way You Lie or something like that. That's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah, I'm not going to try and sing right now because my voice is really, really rocky, but I love that song. Kenneth, how about you? If one of your characters or maybe two of your characters had a theme song.
Well, from the short story, Renee's theme song would be I'm Every Woman by Whitney Houston.
All right.
That kind of fits her to a T.
Mm-hmm.
Like other characters. I know one song I connect with when I do when I wrote Forever Spring. That was more so surrounding one of our side characters from our main story shot within the city, Sarah Johnson, and she grew up in the South. Her dad was was a secret agent, but more like a CIA black ops kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
He was exiled. So, but the song that connects with her and a lot of things she was going through was what's the song by Johnny Cash? I can't think of that song. Oh, let me look it up real quick, because it's Hurt by Johnny Cash.
Yes. Oh, such a good song.
Yeah.
Such a good song.
That's it, Sarah. Yep. Everybody else? Yeah, I kind of had to think more on that, but I know Sarah Johnson's Hurt and Danae is I'm Every Woman by Whitney Houston. Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Yeah, I like to ask these things because I love to know where people's minds go with their characters. And I think that the song that you pick for that character says a lot about them. You know, so I like that. I got asked that question once as a guest on a talk show, and I didn't know she was going to ask me that. I was like, oh, crap. As we were talking about my sci-fi series, and the main character, he's not a nice person. He's really not. He's either the villain or the hero, depending on which side of the battlefield you're on. In fact, even if you're on his side, you might consider him the villain because he's just not a nice guy. But his theme song is Bodies by Drowning Pool. Or conversely, his second theme song is Die Motherfucker Die by Dope. Those are his two theme songs. So, you know, he's not a nice man.
Yeah. That's not Die Motherfucker Die by Dope. They kind of put me in
a
line of what's that, what's the dude, Tom Watts song, probably said his last name wrong, but I can't think of this. I starting to forget the name of stuff nowadays. What's Tom White's song? They played it on the Punisher show on HBO.
Oh, yeah.
Hell Broke Loose, something like that.
Oh, I think I know the one you're talking about, but I don't know the name.
Yeah, that kind of, it's some characters that fit really well. That's one of them. But, you know, crazy enough when it comes to songs, when I'm writing, I listen to music a lot. A lot of music choices I listen to is songs that doesn't have vocals accompanied.
So I
listen to a lot of, maybe a lot of, not just classical, but more so soundtracks from Lord of the Rings or soundtracks from Elder Scrolls. Those kind of give me more mood to write.
Yeah,
I guess that some of those songs could be connected to theme songs for a vision, nice. Yeah, I got to think on that. That's a good question, actually.
I went through my list of characters a while back just to see if I could do it, just to see if I could figure it out. And it was fun. I really got stumped on a few of them. I was like, oh God, I don't know what to give as the theme song. And I've got this series of books with the main character is a woman who is a deputy federal marshal. And I was asked what her theme song would be. Like, I have no idea. I don't know. I came up with something, but I don't remember what it was. I wrote it down, but ask me if I can find it. I have no idea. But she's a real dichotomy. You know, she's very aggressive in a professional situation, and she's also, she'll fall to pieces like a girl in another situation, and she'll fuss at herself. You know, here I am crying like a baby girl, and I'm a grown woman who's a deputy federal marshal. I should be able to do this, damn it. And then she picks up she's always talking about pulling up her droopy deputy drawers. So she'll give a tug on her deputy drawers, and then she'll go off and do what needs doing. She's a fun character. Well, we are almost at the end of our time, and I did want to ask you guys for advice for other authors. Kevin, what's some advice that you would like to give to other authors?
Really, the main advice is you want to write a story. And I know I spoke about before about planning to write, but if you never wrote a story before and you really don't know how to do it, I just say, just start writing. Think of a scenario, what happened during the day, and just write about that. Maybe a conversation you had at work, or maybe something that happened in the past, something that is on your mind at that point. Or you can probably do fan fiction. Maybe you watch an episode of Andor and you saw some parts of it that really got you going. My thing is just kind of change the characters up and just write real quick. If you get in the practice of just doing creative writing, then that will make you a lot more comfortable, so you can actually sit down and plan your stuff. So if you really want to write a book, I just want to write in general, like a story or whatever, I just said, just sit down and start writing, just to get, like, get your brain muscles working, so you can pretty much realize, you know, I can write. This is not that hard like I thought it was. I mean, it's not easy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, just do it. Don't sit there overthink it.
That's great. That is great. I like don't overthink it because, you know, that, I don't know about you, but that's something that I do. That's why I have trouble getting my books published, because I sit down and I overthink it. So, yeah, I understand. Great. Thank you. Kenneth, how about you? What's some advice that you'd like to give?
Yeah, I would agree with KG for like a first-time writer, just write. You can always edit, delete, and change stuff later. And then, like, the overthinking part. Like, I've talked to so many people who say, well, I want to write a book, but they're more concerned about the stuff that don't matter in the beginning, especially written a book. They're concerned about how many pages, what's the cover line look like. None of that matters. Why do you even worry about that? You idea, just write. Start writing. And then the other thing I'll say be don't be discouraged, because you're going to take criticism. It's not always going to be easy, whatnot. So don't get discouraged. Just keep going. And then the one last thing I want to say, don't take shortcuts. Don't take
So, good advice.
Take your time. Put out a good quality product. You know. especially when it comes to editing.
Yes. Oh, yes. You know, that's one thing. One thing nice about Amazon is that they've made it possible for anybody to publish a book. Bad thing about Amazon is that they've made it possible for anybody to publish a book. And there are a lot of people out there who just figure, oh, it's finished, and they're so excited they don't think about whether it's good or not, or whether it's well-written, or if they're getting their point across. And there are these people, you know, they consider themselves purists, and they don't want to change a single word because it's just, now this is perfect, just how it is. And it doesn't matter how I say it because everybody will know what I mean. No, everybody does not know what you mean. And I can remember saying that to my dad when I was about 10 or 12. And he said, no, they don't know what you mean. You have to say it properly so you don't make yourself look like an idiot.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
He was right. And I love that you said that because so many people will take shortcuts and they won't pay an editor. Mm. And, yeah, I know that editing gets expensive, but still, it's something that, you know, if you can't afford to pay somebody, ask a friend who's good with grammar and, you know, make them a nice dinner and say, hey, would you read my book? You know, and just get feedback from people because – we all have done it. We've all made grammatical errors. We've all misspelled words or used a synonym by mistake just because our fingers are going too fast. And you have to consider those things. I mean, I was typing out a test for my 11th graders, and I was supposed to be typing what is the theme of this book. I made a typographical error. And instead of the W, I hit the S. So I handed out to my 11th graders, "Shat is the theme of this book."
Yeah, I know.
Now, not everybody knows that it is the past tense of to shit. My 11th graders knew that. And I got to that, and they all started to laugh, and I was like, oh, my God, what did I do?
Yeah,
but,
hey,
let me
get those
back. Correctly. You know, it was spelled right, but I just hadn't bothered to really pay attention. So, yeah, it was a mess. Oh, God.
Man. Yeah, I got involved. You know, kids not going to let you outlive that either.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. They will catch these things, and they will not let you off the hook, and they will not forget.
Nope.
So... yeah, I felt really dumb after that and had to fix it for the next class because that was my first class of the day that they caught it. I was like, oh, good God, now I've got to go through all
the
copies.
I guess the good thing was at least it was the first class that caught it.
Right, yes. Yes, but of course they went and told all their friends, you know. They went and told all their friends, so later in the day they're still teasing me about it. It was...
yep.
But, I mean, I made worse mistakes while I was teaching, and I just forgave myself and moved on because you can't hold on to those. You just can't hold on to those. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I have had such a lovely time talking to you two. I always do. And I hope that when your new books come out that you'll let me know and we can get you back on the show to talk about it and hear some more excerpts from them and all that sort of thing. Because you're welcome anytime. Just holler at me because I don't always remember to say, hey, y'all want to be on?
No, real talk. I really appreciate you. Let me come on here. I always enjoy the conversations. I love the format. Real comfortable format. Different type of questions. So Yeah, definitely be back on, trust.
Okay, great, wonderful.
Yeah, and I have to second that. I have to second that. It's always fun being on your show, Delaney.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be a guest. So anytime you have me, I'll be more than glad to come back.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Definitely.
Y'all have a happy Thanksgiving tomorrow. Don't eat too much.
Try not to. You do the same. Have fun. Stay warm.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Listeners,
right,
please tune in on Monday, December 12th, when my guests will be Marta Moran Bishop, Karen Vaughn, and Viv Drua. Until next time, this is Delaney Oakes. Goodbye, and have a blessed tomorrow.